Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to our weekly Land to Sky Regional Council COVID-19 call. Thank you for joining us today. Before we get started, just a few housekeeping matters. Just want to remind everyone that this call is being taped and recorded. We try to place those on our Land to Sky website. Sometimes we have a technical glitch, but we want to have this as an archive that we can share with our region for folks that would like to access this in the future. So we appreciate that. Just want to give you a heads up over the next couple of weeks. Next week, we'll have Matthew Martin, Vice President with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. He's out of the Charlotte office, and he will give us an update on the national, state, and regional economy. So we're excited to have him. And then Dr. Mike Walden with NC State will join us in mid-September. So he's scheduled to join us, and he's one of the preeminent economists in North Carolina. So we're excited to have those speakers confirm for these calls. Today, we're going to have an update from the governor's office. Drew Christie, who's governor's Western Regional Director, will be with us. So we always appreciate Drew for sharing with us and give us an update from Governor Cooper. We will not have a state and legislative update today. The General Assembly is out of session, and really the only at the legislative side, would like everyone to be aware of the North Carolina Job Retention Grant Program, because it has a pretty quick deadline. I've shared that through email, and if anyone has any questions, they can reach out to me at nathan@landosky.org. That information is available on the NC Commerce website, but that's the program that where businesses can obtain a grant of up to $250,000 that those were businesses who were unable to access federal support through the Payroll Protection Program or EIDL. So we'll continue to try to share that information. The reason we don't really have a federal update is, as y'all know by reading the headlines and the list of the news reports, the federal government's sort of in an impasse right now on a fourth CARES Act package. So we hope to announce there will be some agreement later on. I know Chris Wall, who represents the Council of Governments in North Carolina, you know, has some hope that in September or so something may happen. But, you know, we're disappointed that the House and Senate have been unable to reach an agreement because our state and local governments and many others are really depending on some assistance at this really challenging time. So today we're really going to focus on child care access and the need for child care. And it's that's always been a challenge for working families to be able to afford child care and have access to child care. But this current crisis has really exacerbated a lot of those challenges. So we're excited to have some individuals with us with the Children and Family Resource Center in Hendersonville and with the Buncombe Partnership for Children joining us today. But first, I'll turn it over to Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. And Drew, can you give us an update from the governor's office? Again, thank you for joining us today.
Sure, Nathan. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you to Land to Sky Regional Council for hosting this. Just to piggyback on what Nathan was talking about with the Job Retention Grants Program, it's nccommerce.com/JRG. If you go to that website, you'll be able to find out all the specifics about the Job Retention Grants Program, and I'll put that in the chat box right now. But just to continue on numbers here, as of today, there have been 149,904 lab-confirmed cases. There have been 2,003,307 completed tests. There are currently 1,023 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. That's up a little bit. We had dropped right below 1,000 people hospitalized, so we're seeing a slight uptick in that. However, we are, as Secretary Cohen said yesterday, we are seeing our numbers stabilize, our percent positives, they are stabilizing. And so that's a good thing. And so we're right about 7%. Again, we want to be about somewhere below 5% or below in percent positive, and that's something we're working on. But we are seeing a leveling, so that's good news there. And to tie into today's topic, and I'm making this very short for everybody today, Secretary Cohen mentioned a phone number yesterday on the press conference. So if you need child care for school-age children, there's a hotline that has all the resources and referral system, and there are representatives available to assist weekdays between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern time. That number is 1-888-600-1685. And when you call the hotline, a child care referral specialist will provide referrals to licensed child care programs that are open and have vacancies for the ages of the children for whom care is being requested. And so availability of child care varies from community to community. So I thought that was a good tie-in for today's call. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew. Do you have any, I know we've seen reports at college campuses, UNC Chapel Hill, transition their undergraduate students to online, and you've seen some outbreaks at NC State and other campuses. I know those, the UNC system and our other educational institutions are working closely with DHHS and the governor's office, but do you have any additional things to add regarding like positivity rates and other things as those individuals are in congregate living arrangements?
So that's a kind of a tough one to answer, and Secretary Cohen briefly touched on it yesterday. Universities are not required to report their numbers. They are encouraged to report their numbers, but it is not a requirement. So we don't know the full numbers and data from the outbreaks across the state at universities and colleges. We are hoping that these institutions of higher learning are being honest and trying to report those numbers the best they can to us so we can get an accurate picture of what's going on. But it's still too early to tell what the positivity rate is for the outbreaks thus far.
Well, Drew, thank you for that update. I know we're seeing other campuses, and certainly that's going to happen anytime you get a large number of individuals together. Even if you have a low positivity rate, you have 1,000 individuals together. If 2% are positive, that's 20 people. So I know our K-12 schools and higher ed institutions certainly have their hands full trying to respond to this. But we're excited to have Jamie Weiner with the Children and Family Resource Center in Hendersonville. And Jamie, before I get started, I want to share an article I saw in the Wall Street Journal earlier, I guess this past week, and really it brings to bear the national challenge of where we're at is it's, the title of that was Working Parents Are Hitting Their Coronavirus Breaking Point and Paying for It. So more parents are in the market for childcare because maybe schools are in session or other childcare options aren't available. And it's really creating a challenge for working families. I know that's certainly true for the pre-K children, but even older children as well. So we appreciate the work of the Children and Family Resource Center. And can you provide us an update from Henderson County and the area that you serve about what you see parents are facing and where the gaps are?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having me here for part of the discussion. You know, personally, I have a school-aged child, and we are navigating that at home week one. And it's definitely coming with its own set of challenges. I've actually called the governor's hotline myself, and it was nice to really talk to a live person and get information for some of the school-aged options in our area. They're very helpful. They'll send you a list of what's available. And then if you need to tweak your settings, whether it's however miles radius or timing and things like that, you can just call back. And they're really have been very helpful with that. We also know that the school system, we've been working with the Education Foundation, and they're housing a list of available school-aged options on their website for parents as well. As you mentioned, though, some of these are coming at a pretty high premium. And so if folks have children in an early child care setting as well, where they're paying for child care already and now they're having to pay for school-aged care, this is certainly a burden on families. We're hearing about a lot of kinship care. People are sending their children with aunts, uncles, grandparents, things like that. Our child care centers right now are about at 50% enrollment. So there are some openings, but there's different struggles there with getting teachers and, you know, families' comfort levels with sending their children to a child care setting right now. So definitely lots of different struggles for families and educators and all sorts of everybody involved right now.
You mentioned child care providers have some open slots. What do you attribute the slots not matching the age of children that maybe families need, or is it a affordability issue? They either don't have subsidy dollars or they can't pay out of pocket for that care, Jamie?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of different things. I think with some child care centers, they're having a hard time staffing, like infant classrooms and things like that. I also think that some families just aren't comfortable sending their children back. So, you know, it's hard to open an infant classroom for only two infants due to the level of care that those children need and the cost of opening or having an infant classroom open due to the ratios required and things like that. So I think that's one part of it. But yeah, I think a lot of folks are just kind of at different comfort levels, and if they're able to work from home, I think a lot of families are still keeping their children home.
And certainly for those families that are able to telework, not that this is easy, but they're able to somewhat manage their childcare responsibilities and helping their children with learning while also doing their job. But, you know, many of our entry-level workers or lower-wage workers, they're unable to telework. And so really the brunt of this crisis is hitting our lower income families the hardest in many cases. Do you have any thoughts or solutions there of ways that we could help them, because, you know, they're unable to telework?
Right. And the cost of these school age programs for anybody with, you know, someone that still needs care while they're in school remotely, it's definitely can be prohibitive to families. We've seen a lot of creativity with employers bringing a tutor in. We've seen folks really thinking outside the box to support their employees, which has been fantastic. I don't have the magic answer to fix it all for sure, but I think just, you know, if offering as much flexibility as possible to those who do have young children and school-age children, and trying to be as flexible as possible, I think is a great goal, if possible, when possible.
If you have any questions for any of our presenters, please enter those in the chat. You can also text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. We're supposed to have a representative from Buckham Partnership for Children, and I don't see that they have joined our call. And if they have, I apologize for not being able to recognize you. So in the way our call, like I said, was set up, folks have to unmute themselves. We have to unmute them from our end. But I'm going to ask Jennifer Bosworth with AV Tech, because Jennifer works closely with Buckham Partnership for Children. And I hate to put you on the spot, Jennifer, but you know, can you share what you're hearing from child care providers and others in early childhood education?
Certainly. I'm happy to share what I'm in contact with, although I do know the Buncombe Partnership for Children is much more closely contacted with our centers. I'm currently, of course, advising students and getting ready for fall semester. Some of the challenges that centers are having is that staff have their own school-age children, and there is a need for those staff to support their own children. So being in an early care and education classroom and being worried about the care of their own children is challenging. The reduced capacity is so that they can maximize the distancing as much as possible. They're having to utilize additional staff that they would not normally utilize so that staff are not floating between classrooms. This would allow for less contact across classrooms in a building. There are programs that I'm aware of that have worked very diligently to set up the opportunities for school-age children so that they can access their courses, their schoolwork, while in school-age care. The challenge with that is that lots of centers have minimal internet access for their own employees and their own purposes, much less a volume of children accessing Zoom or Canvas or Google Classrooms, Schoology, whatever the schools are using. That's particularly challenging and stressful on the IT side of centers, if there actually is an IT side to some of these programs. It's been a challenge for the students that I'm encountering, because the vast majority of my students do work in early childhood settings. Their largest challenge as individuals really does revolve around balancing their own children's needs with the needs within centers of needing staff and attending to the needs of children in classrooms there. Many of them have been working since schools shut down without stop. The enhanced protocols that are out there are great, but it's adding extra stresses to an already complicated job. Wearing masks around young children, it takes away part of how we build relationships with children. So that's some of the challenges I'm hearing, some of the same things we're seeing it at AV Tech, but also in centers is access to those cleaning materials to keep everything clean and sanitized and do our best to keep children healthy. The state's done a great deal on getting those supplies out. I know the Buncombe Partnership for Children has worked on getting those supplies out to centers, but our supply chains are not in good shape for those kinds of supplies. So we're just stacking stress upon stress. So I think that's really where it's at for centers and employees in those centers and families for those centers, is they're having to keep those classrooms small so there aren't enough spaces. And we already had childcare deserts in Buncombe County. So it's complicating an already complicated issue.
Jennifer, and again, thank you for joining us, and I apologize for putting you on the spot, you know, we're sort of seeing in the employment market, we still have a relatively high unemployment rate, very similar to near the height of the Great Recession. But at the same time, we have many employers that are searching for workers. So it's a little unusual for a time when the unemployment rate is so high that we still have so many open jobs. Part of my theory is many of these working families are unable to go back to work because of childcare issues. Are you hearing that from those families or seeing much pushback? I know a lot of employers are trying to accommodate that, but it's a real challenge on the employer side to provide childcare on site.
It is absolutely a challenge. There are centers currently hiring. In the spring when everything shut down and the college went 100% remote, I had student interns in a local program, and at capacity, they were well over 200 children served. They didn't need any, they needed staff at that time. Then this hit and enrollment dropped significantly. At their lowest, I think they went from over 200 children, and that includes infants through school age, to about 45 to 50. So they didn't need all that staff. Now they're ramping up a little bit and beginning to need staff because there are parents who are not going back to work because their children's needs are need focus from parents. So yeah, parents who want to go back to work can't go back to work because they don't have anybody to care for their children during the day. I've said this in a few places, but we talk about the pillars of compensatory education, and you know, educating our children is the primary pillar. But one of those pillars is also, and I hate the phrase, but it was what was used, is child warehousing. Lots of parents do not enter the workforce, mostly mothers, do not enter the workforce until their child reaches school age. And so now we've hit this point where both parents were working and now schools are closed. Who's going to stay home? So moms who had been working, mostly moms, not all of them, but mostly moms who had been working, can no longer work because there's no one to care for their children. So they can't go back to work even though they're willing.
And before this crisis hit, you know, we had a lack of childcare slots in our region. Some of that was related to the challenge of attracting and retaining early childhood educators. And so we're excited for our partnership with the Children and Family Resource Center and Buchan Partnership for Children to try to expand that ability. But Jennifer, to your point, I hate to use the term crisis, but we were in a really tough predicament prior to COVID-19. And then, you know, since it's hit, it's created much more of a challenge. So I want to turn it over to Jamie and to you. What are some of the solutions? How can Landis-Sky Regional Council be helpful? How can our local governments be supportive? What are policymakers at the state and federal level? What can they do to make an impact here? Because we're going to have to find, you know, more effective solutions to that article's point that I shared with you earlier during this call. I do think many families are, you know, at the breaking point almost. So what are your thoughts there?
I'll start and then Jamie, you can take it away. One of the things that could use support is, I think we're at a point where more children could be cared for in family childcare homes if these family childcare homes had funding to get started. It's not a traditional role, it's not a traditional employment, but it could meet a community need. Whereas, they have to go through pre-licensing workshops. There's a cost for that. In fact, we've just scheduled one on our campus for September for this area, for those people who want to open a licensed program, whether child care center or family child care home. They have to do this pre-licensing workshop. There's a cost involved with that. Supporting those small community places in people's homes would help meet some of the needs, because some of our neighbors might need that extra support that we could offer. And it would be an income for that family that they might not otherwise get. It's, you know, it's a challenge, but some centers have extra classrooms. We talked about this for a long time in the Asheville Buncombe Preschool Planning Collaborative group that you and I were a part of, Nathan, that they've got room and space for expansion. Well, right now we've got a few extra staff that might could fill an additional classroom, but there aren't materials for that classroom. Those are some of the things that I see as places of opportunity.
And yeah, just to add to that, we actually have a cohort training right now for our substitute program so they can get trained in EDU 119 and get into the classroom to expand that workforce. But to echo what you said earlier, Nathan, I mean, the childcare industry is one that was really struggling well before COVID, and now it really has exacerbated all of the issues and the struggles that they have. We know that the cost of childcare is high for families. We also know that these childcare providers could go work at a fast food industry and make more money than what they're making right now, and they're caring for our children for sometimes 9 hours a day. You know, we know the earliest years are so important in a child's life, and I think just noticing, I think the fact that we're talking about childcare more and how important it is huge. And I think just to keep the conversation going and the emphasis on the importance of childcare and supporting that industry, you know, however we can, we need to just be thinking creatively to support our childcare providers, to support the industry, to support extra subsidies so families can get back to work. And just really, you know, it was broken before, and now it's just really in need of some support. I mean, we've got centers that have spent basically their entire facility budget in the first 3 months since COVID to just get prepared and clean and all these things. We've had 2 outbreaks in centers in our county that have had to shut down and put families out of work there. So I think we just need to continue the conversation about the importance and the relevance and additional funding for subsidies so we can get families back to work and things like that.
I think that's great points, Jamie. And Derek Edwards, you had a question about the state initiative and new standards. The standards have been increasing exponentially over the years. Way back in the 70s, we were just health and safety standards at that point, but they are now much, much more stringent, and even more so now during the pandemic. It has made it harder for family childcare homes to operate because they are in their own home. I have a friend who had been in Henderson County and was a family childcare home in Henderson County and has since moved to Buncombe County and cannot reopen her family childcare home because putting a fire alarm system in a private home is cost prohibitive in terms of the amount of money you make offering childcare in your home. So yeah, absolutely, you're right. Family childcare homes in Buncombe County have continued to close year after year after year. And we've got fewer now than I ever remember us having. And it's gotten more complicated. The rated license process, the evaluations they have to go through it for that, the fire marshal requirements, the building code requirements, we've made it extremely complicated for family childcare homes to operate. So yes, you're absolutely right.
And we understand, you know, certainly why this is a highly regulated area, because we all want to make sure children are safe. But to your point, that's created for the funding that centers receive. Oftentimes, they're not able to absorb that cost. There were some comments in the chat, and I don't know if Dr. Laura Leatherwood, president of Blue Ridge Community College, wants to share with us, but she was talking about the effort to try to create a day camp with local manufacturers and employers to provide some childcare options for their workers. Dr. Leatherwood, do you want to add or elaborate at all?
Well, we reached out to, in order to get people back into the workforce, that's certainly a need that they have. So one of our manufacturers reached out to us and said, hey, you've got that great conference hall, we've got great broadband capability, why don't we look at partnering and developing a virtual learning center where students could come, school-age children could come, and they could do their schoolwork and they would be safe there. So I said, well, you know, we're in the business of adults. I don't know that I'm accustomed to children. So we said, okay, we need a programming partner. So we, first of all, we did an inventory of our manufacturers and said, okay, tell us what you need. What percentage of people cannot work is essentially that first shift, the day shift. What percentage and how many are you talking about? And so we did that inventory, but then we reached out to the Boys and Girls Club, the Family Resource Center, WCCA, everywhere we could think of to get a programming partner, because those individuals are used to day camps or learning labs or whatever. And it came down to, number one, cost. The YMCA was so expensive, we couldn't even consider affording that. And then the Boys and Girls Club, they said, well, we could do that, but we don't even have enough staff to run ours during the daytime. And so we ran into so many roadblocks, and the document for all the requirements that we had to have, it was overwhelming and daunting. And we finally just threw our hands up and said, this is not something that we can do, but I'm sitting on a facility and I have the ability to do it, and I couldn't make it work, which really is really unfortunate, because we were trying to meet a community need and couldn't do it. We couldn't pull it off. And so we just couldn't make it work. So we're sitting here trying to just work with our employees, just like our manufacturers are, and try to figure out some kind of flexible work solution for them so they can continue to work. We couldn't do it. And that's not in my nature to say we can't do that.
Absolutely. Dr. Leatherwood is very persistent and incredibly innovative. So I think the challenge we have is, you know, unfortunately, we're going to be in a virtual learning environment going into 2021 in the spring, and I would be surprised if, you know, it changes early spring. So we're looking at 3, 4, 5, 6 more months, perhaps the entire school year of this challenge. And, you know, how do we get through that and support those families? I know there are, you know, some day camp options for parents, but usually those are, you know, would cost them out of pocket several hundred dollars per week to do that. And, you know, if you have a parent that's just making $12 or $15 an hour, for those families, that's probably beyond what they could afford. Gene Laughlin with AB Tech, and also has been chair of the Buchan Partnership for Children, is with us. Dr. Laughlin, you'd shared some things in the chat. Do you have anything to share?
I could share an update from the partnership on what they're doing in regards to the COVID response. Can I share my screen, or?
You cannot. We're afraid you might share inappropriate things, so I apologize for that. I need to change the settings to allow you to do that.
Nathan has worked with me too long, so I'm the only one blocked. The rest of you probably can. I should have emailed it to you. Well, very quickly, some of the various programs that the partnership offers, the Reach Out and Read, where we provide materials for children at doctor's offices and practices, that program has continued throughout this period. but as most of you would imagine, at a very lower rate since most waiting rooms are closed, and that's where we provided that documentation, those materials. The Dolly Parton's Imagination Library books are directly mailed to the families for children, so obviously we have been able to continue that program in support of early childhood learning and reading. Our Kaleidoscope Play and Learn groups, obviously we had to stop having the face-to-face play and learn meetings. So in response, we have been mailing out learning activity bags to families and been sending emails to families with 2 to 3 activity suggestions per week. We've had 106 children and 98 parents participate in the month of July in that new program. NC Pre-K, we are moving forward. As has been said earlier, the challenge is that with the limitations of classroom size and numbers in classrooms, it's going to be very, very difficult to fill all the slots out there that we do have to fill. Our child care health consultation, obviously it had to go from face-to-face to remote, but we are doing it remotely. And in fourth quarter of our 19-20 year, there were 258 COVID consultations through emails, text, and phone calls. You can imagine our services went from the typical questions that they deal with children to COVID in children. Our child care resources has been mentioned. As you saw in WLOS, we have been receiving funding and using it to buy PPE and cleaning supplies and getting them out to providers. And we continue to seek additional funding sources for that. Our workforce development program, as Jennifer pointed out, has gone online with the courses they're taking and the training. I will point out, I put in the chat room that the Buncombe Partnership wishes to continue doing some face-to-face early childhood educator training in outdoor locations. So if someone has a church or someone or other entity that maybe has a large covered picnic area or some other picnic area outside that they would be willing to let them use, please let us know. We are providing support, continued support virtually, either through Zoom or online, for the directors in helping them kind of figure out reopening and other expectations and requirements for continued services in our facilities. And our Shaping Buncombe, which is, kind of our healthy program. We just moved it online and it's going through Zoom and phone and text. Obviously working a lot with other organizations out there to get information out to families about trying to maintain a healthy lifestyle in the COVID era. And again, our sustaining facility quality, obviously we are working very much with helping the facilities simply continue to grow in this period. So that's the update and report I have, Nathan.
Dr. Laughlin, thank you for sharing that. And again, I apologize for any miscommunication. Like a partnership for children, probably I dropped the ball on that. So please convey my apologies. And I'm sorry we are unable on our settings to allow you to share your screen.
They were just wanting me to present. They were wanting me to present so that you would all feel sorry for them having me on the board.
Okay. Well, they're fortunate to have your leadership, and you know we're really blessed in our region to have wonderful early childhood partnerships. The work that's happening in our region is really recognized statewide as some of the most innovative to meet the child care crisis. And I know pretty much all of our counties have work groups and efforts to improve early childhood education because they recognize how important it is for the health of children and families and our long-term really economic and social prosperity. So we're very grateful for them. I know we have several employers on our call today, and certainly encourage y'all to reach out to us if we can brainstorm, I know Dr. Leatherwood mentioned the option they were trying to pursue that they were unable to just due to state regulations, but if you have any thoughts on how we can share information on how we can better support your workers, please let us know, because again, this is an ongoing challenge. And if you want to add anything to the chat, you're welcome to do so. I'll just turn it over for some final comments for Jamie, for Dr. Leatherwood, Jennifer, Jean, others on the call. You know, as far as takeaways and next steps, any thoughts?
Well, the last parting thought I think that I have is that this is just one piece of the challenges that we have in helping to educate our region at all levels. And if we can't educate them, we can't get them into the workforce. So if you look at this is just one problem that we have to try to solve, or at least to make movement towards. Certainly, as we go head toward this My Future NC goal for post-secondary attainment, if we can't even get people, if we can't even get quality childcare, we certainly cannot get them to where they can be employed in a career or a job making a living that will support and lift up their family. So it's the continuum of the whole thing, and this is the early roadblock for us.
I agree with Laura that, you know, that's our challenge. We talk about the NC pre-K slots, and much of the time it's because we cannot find qualified teachers with that bachelor's degree that's required. We need to find ways to encourage individuals to get into these pathways, to pursue the associate's degree and up through the bachelor's, so that we have a strong, dedicated workforce to serve our children, our families, and our businesses.
I agree with both what Dr. Leatherwood and Jean had to say. I think a key component of this, and our government's going to run out of money, but childcare cannot reopen at full capacity without funding. Jamie mentioned it, that centers have spent their entire budget in 3 months of a pandemic, and it's still ongoing at this point. Without significant funding for both education of teachers to get folks into the career field and into classrooms, but also to these centers to pay these teachers, to pay for operational expenses, it can't be done without a significant investment. The National Association for the Education of Young Children has done a number of surveys during the pandemic and been a part of several articles that I'll be happy to send to you, Nathan, if you'd like, about the crisis that our childcare is in currently. It can't be done without extra support.
Right. I agree with everything that everyone has said. I mean, we've heard centers are losing anywhere from $12,000 to $70,000 a month, and they can't possibly continue to keep their doors open without support. And then these children are not getting care. And, you know, as Dr. Leatherwood just said, these are some of the most formative years that have such long-term effects on future education and our future workforce. And it's just one of the most important times in a child's life. And if we don't show that we value not only the providers and, you know, the directors of these programs and just early learning as a whole, we're going to be in some tough spots down the road. So any support of early childhood that we could get would really just, you know, inject some energy and some really the support that this field needs right now.
I know the state, through the CARES Act, they were able to provide some funding. I know there were a lot of strings to that. Was that able to get down to centers in any way or to local partnerships?
Yeah, there was a lot of great funding that came actually from DCDEE. There was a hazard bonus pay, which was really helpful for childcare providers who, you know, some providers, the providers that were able to stay and continue to work, were able to get this bonus, whereas some of their other coworkers went to collect unemployment and were receiving more than they were as staying on staff. So that was a great benefit. They also, DCDEE was also able to pay providers the subsidy based on their February enrollment numbers. So they were still able to get some supplemental income that way. A lot of our providers don't have subsidy though. So for those centers that weren't able to get that support, they were looking at a great loss of income for those months. We've heard providers that have applied for the PPP loans, and that was really a lifeline for them as well. So there has definitely been some support, but those funds are, you know, as those funds run out, we'll continue to see the same issues. So,
well, that job retention grant is available for nonprofits as well. So there may be an opportunity for some centers that weren't able to take advantage of PPP or EIDL assistance through SBA. So we can help get that word out. We'd be glad to do so. I think, you know, some of this comes back to why we try to share that state and federal legislative update. And to Jennifer's point, I understand, you know, the federal government has invested certainly a lot of money with the three CARES Acts that have been passed already. But to some extent, this is like the old commercial, and many of y'all are too young to remember this, but the Fram oil filter commercial where they say, you can either pay me now or pay me later. And if we're not able to address this, it's going to have long-term economic consequences to our country and to our communities, and it will result in less economic activity, less revenue for our state, local, and federal governments. So it is really critical that something happens, that our state and local governments receive additional aid where they can make investments in areas like this that are so impactful. So we appreciate everyone joining us today. It was a great discussion. I know there are no easy answers, and you know, if there were easy answers, we would have, you know, our region and state and country would have already solved it. So that's what you know, we have to tackle on. Again, hope you can join us next week, Thursday, August 27th. We'll have the Vice President Matthew Martin with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. He's out of Charlotte. He covers the Carolinas for the Federal Reserve Bank. And he's one of two vice presidents with the Federal Reserve Bank out of Richmond. Give us an update where our economy is at, and we'll look forward to that discussion. Again, thanks to Drew Christie with the Governor's Office for joining us. And again, Dr. Laura Leatherwood with Blue Ridge Community College, Dr. Jean Laughlin with AB Tech, Jennifer Bosworth with AB Tech, and Jamie Weiner with the Children, Family, and Resource Center. So again, thank you to everyone for joining us this week. Hope you all stay safe, stay well, and have a great rest of your day.